Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, I call the remote meeting of the Minnesota House of Higher Education Finance Committee to order. I apologize. I have printed off the a notice that wasn't exactly what I had anticipated, and so anyway, I apologize for that. So now that we have called our first meeting to order, the committee administrator will take the roll, and when your name is called, please say present.
Chair Bernardi.
Present.
Vice Chair Christensen.
Present.
Representative O'Neill.
Present.
Representative Albright.
Present.
Representative Daniels.
Present.
Representative Erickson. Representative Erickson. Representative Hansen. Representative Hansen. Representative Heintzman.
Present.
Representative Howard.
Present.
Representative Keeler.
Present.
Representative Cleavorn.
Cleavorn present.
Representative Kosnick.
Kosnick present.
Representative Kreisha. Representative Kreisha. Representative Mason.
Present.
Representative Meckland.
Present.
Representative Noor.
Present.
Representative Sandell.
Present.
Representative Sandsted.
Present.
And Representative Thompson.
Representative Thompson present.
Welcome everyone today. I want to have someone make a motion for the minutes for January 19th, 2021. Is anybody interested in doing that?
I will make that motion, Chair Bernardi, to approve the minutes.
Thank you, Representative Meckland. Representative Meckland moves approval of the minutes for January 19th, 2021. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed, the motion prevails and the minutes for January 19, 2021 are approved. Okay, we have had a great response for our hearing today, and many students have reached out to us to testify. We have a very tight agenda, and in order to make sure that everyone has an opportunity to share their story in the next hour and a half, I am going to try to keep the meeting moving along. If you happen to have a clarifying question, like what an acronym stands for or something specific like that, please feel free to ask after the testifier. Otherwise, we are going to hold off questions to tell at the end to make sure that we give an opportunity for all of our testifiers here today to provide their testimony. And our staff will be happy to connect committee members to student organizations, ask after if they have some follow-up questions or would like to schedule a time to meet with them. With that, I would like to invite our first testifier to join us. Sophie Strzok from St. Catherine University and Alex Stanley from Concordia University, St. Paul will be presenting on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Private College Students. Welcome to our committee. Ms. Strzok, you may proceed.
Hello. Again, I am Sophie Strzok, for the record. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name again is Sophie Strzok, and I am finishing my senior year at St. Catherine University in St. Paul. I am majoring in political science with minors in philosophy and international studies. After St. Kate's, I plan to attend law school, pursuing a JD in civil law with an emphasis in disability law. I have lived in Minneapolis, Minnesota my entire life, and am an only child. I I graduated in 2018 from Nova Classical Academy in St. Paul. Since I was still in my younger high school years, I've always wanted to go to St. Kate's. The small class sizes, mission to foster a tightly knit community and continuously amplify the social justice work and advocacy for positive change is really what drew me to the school. To me, St. Kate's was my family apart from my own, and really showed me that if one person couldn't be there to help with your challenges, there would be so many more that would step up. As mentioned, I am the chair of the Minnesota Association of Private College Students, an acronym also known as MAPSIS. The goal of MAPSIS is to strengthen each private institution by working together and sharing ideas that make each campus successful. For this academic year, our focus within MAPSIS has been to deal with the effects of the ongoing pandemic, as many students have had to face the challenges of hybrid or online learning. These challenges have included mental health strains, adapting to new environments, or learning in a space that may not be ideal, or even needing to be displaced in order to be more successful in academics. By meeting monthly, student leaders of the 17 private colleges within MAPSIS have been able to provide more support for each other by sharing ideas and planning different initiatives, accommodating to the campus's needs to meet the overall MAPSIS goal of strengthening each school's college experience. In light of the nation's racial reckoning of 2020, the MAPSIS agenda is focused on prioritizing the current anti-racism movement and the importance of civil advocacy. MAPSIS work in 2021 will continue to elevate every school's anti-racist efforts, and in addition, work towards building a stronger partnership with Indigenous communities. MAPSIS is a strong advocate for the Minnesota State Grant Program, and with the $1.5 billion deficit that is going to occur this upcoming legislative session, it is critical that the impact of the Minnesota State Grant Program is known. This past year, at St. Catherine University, 1,150 students received a state grant, which is approximately 29% of the undergraduate population. This investment creates opportunities to grow beyond simply pursuing a degree, possibilities for students to further feel part of their campus community, and help remove financial barriers for those who otherwise may not have been able to obtain a higher education. This grant provides financial support that is critical to their success and ability to have a college experience. Thank you for supporting the state grant program, and I hope you continue to increase funding for future Minnesota students. In addition, I am also the external affairs co-chair of the Student Senate for St. Catherine University, and our mission within the Student Senate is to represent the student body and advocate for students' needs in regards to the St. Kate's experience. My position specifically as external affairs works in the spring semester to bring awareness to the Minnesota State Grant and facilitate advocacy efforts at Day at the Capitol, typically held in March. As this year looks a little different as to past Day at the Capitol events, the Student Senate will continue to raise awareness and advocate for the Minnesota State Grant with the guidance of MAPSIS. Many students are grateful to receive the state grant, and thank you for your investment, especially with the challenges that have developed with the current pandemic. The state grant is even more critical in ensuring students can be successful in their academics and campus community. Because of the state grant, students have been able to give back to their campus and community through research, leadership, and several other involvements. I am followed by Alexis Stanley, representing Concordia University within MAPSIS, and receives the Minnesota State Grant herself. She will speak from experience, from personal experience, as to how their experience dealing with COVID during college has impacted them. Thank you for taking your time to hear how MAPSIS works to continuously support student-led campus improvement efforts and advocate for the Minnesota State Grant. Thank you.
Madam Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Alexis Stanley, and I'm from Farmington, Minnesota. I'm a senior at Concordia University in St. Paul, and I went there to play lacrosse, but also obviously to further my education. I'm involved in numerous extracurricular groups, including the Comm Club, Student Athlete Wellness Group, Black Athletes United, and I'm the Vice President of Student Affairs and Relations for Concordia Student Senate, along with also being a member of MAPSIS, which is a group of civic-minded college students who together represent the public policy and social issues of 17 colleges in the Minnesota Private College Council. I also work full-time as the digital manager for Minnesota Voice. And COVID has taken an immense toll on my life personally. I am a type 1 diabetic, which puts me in the high-risk category, which scares me every single day. I feel overwhelmed and isolated most of the time. I work full-time from home, and all my classes are online at the moment, which means I pretty much never leave my bedroom. I've faced a lot of challenges over the last year, and one of them was mental health. I was mentally in probably the worst place I've ever been in last semester due to COVID affecting every aspect of my life. I usually am a Dean's List student, and I struggled hard, and I'm still struggling. COVID took my lacrosse season last spring, and due to the amount of stress I got from being around my team and the potential to be exposed and the ongoing struggle I've been having in school, I quit this spring. And it was my last season as a collegiate athlete because I don't have the mental capacity to do my schoolwork, work full-time, and play lacrosse. COVID has negatively impacted pretty much everything, and it's hard when it comes to school because it feels like I'm not really learning anything. These last two semesters have been arguably the hardest of my entire college career due to many factors that have to do with COVID. The online learning structure, the extra work that has to be done due to not being in person. It's all about holding accountability. And it's just a different learning environment that I personally wouldn't wish upon anyone. But I am extremely grateful to be here and to be in college furthering my education. And I have the Minnesota State Grant to thank. I probably wouldn't be here attending school as a first-generation college student without it. My family can't afford to send me to college. My family's estimated contribution is $0, and I'm not ashamed to share that. The state grant is why I'm going to be the first one in my family to graduate from college this spring, and I couldn't be more grateful. I have post-college plans to attend graduate school. I just recently applied to American University in Washington, D.C. to further my education in their political communications master's program. But overall, it's crazy to think about all the obstacles COVID has thrown my way. But regardless of all of them, I am just happy to be here. And I thank the Minnesota State Grant for that. And I thank you guys, all of you guys, for your support for the grant, and I hope it's continued. And I thank you for the opportunity to present to you today.
Thank you very much for your testimony. With us next is Keyshawn Alexis, and from St. Thomas University, and on deck is Brenda DeRosas. And if you could please state your name for the record, and we've asked each of our testifiers to limit their testimony to 3 minutes, and we will be able to get everyone's testimony in hopefully by the end. Thank you very much. You may proceed, Keyshawn Alexis.
Thank you. Keyshawn Alexiuk. Hello, Madam Chairman and members. I appreciate you all for letting me speak this afternoon. My name is Keyshawn Alexiuk. I'm a senior at the University of St. Thomas, where I'll be graduating in spring with a degree in business administration, real estate studies. My plan for after college is to continue my career as a commercial real estate appraiser. Being the second oldest of four, I've always had a goal to lead by example for my younger brother and sister. Seeking a school where I could stand out and be a leader, I chose to attend Wayzata High School in Plymouth, Minnesota. There, I met a few of my lifetime mentors, such as Tracy Bird and Chappelle Hook, who pushed me to become a better man and student, as well as many friends who have helped shape me into who I am today. After graduating from Wayzata High School in 2017, I had a mission to become the first person in my family to graduate from college. Refusing to set the bar low for my younger siblings and peers, I decided to become a student at one of the most prestigious business schools in the Midwest, the University of St. Thomas. I knew the connections I would make at St. Thomas would last a lifetime, And I wouldn't just be another number like I would have been if I would have chosen one of the bigger schools on my list. Although some students found online learning difficult due to COVID, I've actually benefited from this alternative of college. Excuse me. Online learning has allowed me to take two J-term courses, which would be nearly impossible in any of the other years in college. As a result, I'll be graduating from the University of St. Thomas in this upcoming spring. Within my years at St. Thomas, I've come to understand two main things, friendship and gratitude. I have befriended numerous students through classmate engagement, as well as found my brothers through a year of playing football for the Tommies. As a Cerise Walburn scholar, I've joined an elite group of young African-American men who have dreams and aspirations like mine of bettering the society around us. Likewise, I have felt the ultimate feelings of gratitude for those who have helped the continuation of my education and life. One of these identities would be those behind the Minnesota State Grant. What some see as just money going into an account, I see as an investment into the dreams I have to emerge as a leader within the Minnesota community. These funds have not only helped me in my financial aspects of college, but have also filled my life with the fuel to achieve the next level of my goals. Not having to be worried about coming out of pocket to pay for my education has allowed me to focus on becoming a better leader, a leader who will use my influence to better our community every chance I get. Because the Minnesota State Grant has been one of the most valuable resources to my higher education, I can only show all of you gratitude for helping me progress in my life in such a generous way. I ask you all to continue shaping leaders like myself through this opportunity. Continue to support the next generation of leaders and scholars, and I will follow your example. Once again, I would like to thank you all for funding the Minnesota State Grant and allowing me to testify about the benefits of the program. And also, I'd like to give a little shout out to Allison and Carolyn of the Minnesota Private Colleges Council. Thank you for everything you do and keep being great. Thank you all and have a great day.
Okay, I believe, am I filling right in here?
Okay, I got, oh, I'm okay. I'm off now, so sorry, but thank you for being on the alert because I did lose connection earlier, not just for a couple minutes, but thank you, Representative Christensen.
I'll keep my eye open, yeah.
Thank you very much. Ms. DeRosa, you may proceed.
Hello, for the record, my name is Brenda De Rosas Lazaro. Madam Chair and members of the committee, I would like to start off by thanking you for this opportunity to speak today. I am a junior first-generation immigrant, first-generation college student at Gustavus Adolphus College. I am majoring in political science with a minor in public health. I was raised in Everly, Minnesota with two hardworking parents and two younger sisters, one aged 12 and the other 16. I'm here just today to speak on the behalf of not only my fellow guests who received the Minnesota State Grant, but also to provide perspective on some of the most underrepresented groups, such as immigrants, those of low socioeconomic status, and students of color. The Minnesota State Grant provided me the opportunity to access higher education at a great institution like Gustavus. The continuation and expansion of the Minnesota State Grant and financing for higher education institutions are the start of an effort to close the opportunity gap that underprivileged students have faced. It is especially important now during the COVID-19 pandemic that we provide the resources for students to attend these institutions to continue to cultivate well-rounded citizens who not only fight for themselves, but for others. COVID-19 has disproportionately affected people of color by twofold. Unfortunately, this past May, my family experienced COVID firsthand. My mother contracted COVID a week before her birthday. Our community of undocumented low-income families were taking food off their own table to place it on ours. My mother was recovering for a month after her intense face-to-face with COVID. I didn't know if I was going to be able to pay for books, tuition, or even basic necessities come fall. This is the challenge that many college students face this past year because as undergraduate students, our places of employment were not considered essential, our hours were cut, or we were out of work altogether. Fortunately, Dr. Gustavus, the faculty and staff were willing to help and led me toward the correct resources and were always willing to give a helping hand. And for that, I have nothing but gratitude. Attending a four-year private college seemed impossible, but Gustavus made it possible for me to be standing here with new goals and aspirations. Their help wasn't just in these trying times when learning from home was the new norm, but when the integrity of the DACA program was under attack, they were willing to grant their full support to me. After graduating next year, I intend to work for a nonprofit organization that focuses on immigration, public service and policy to help build experience for graduate study and political science for public health. I hope to help those in my communities so they don't have to endure as much as I did. I do not stand before you for my personal gain. I stand before you for the 12 and 16 year old that live with my parents with dreams of making history like our new Madam Vice President did today. My parents brought me here in the pursuit of the American dream, and their daughter speaking to the Minnesota House Committee for Higher Education Finance and Policy is farther than they had hoped for. And I would like to thank you for that, for the opportunity to speak on behalf of first-generation students like myself and to bring the voice of my mother and father to you. And finally, I would also like to thank you for all your efforts and concerns in higher education and the equity thereof, because without your efforts, our dreams would remain just that, dreams. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your testimony. Our next testifiers are going to be testifying on behalf of LEAD Minnesota. We have from North Hennepin Community College, we have Priscilla Mayowa. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you for inviting me and for having me speak today. For the record, my name is Priscilla Mayowa, and I'm currently serving as president of LEAD MN. Chair Bernardi, Ranking Member O'Neill, and members of the committee, I am the president of the statewide student association LEAD MN. Our organization is in the business of connecting college students for change. For years, we have and will continue to bring forward the hopes, dreams, aspiration, and more importantly, the voices of the nearly 180,000 students that we represent. LEAD MN serves as the voice of students by engaging student leaders at all 48 community and technical colleges in Minnesota, ensuring that their voice determines our agenda. There's a question that is asked of all student leaders when we join the organization. Why do you lead MN? I will share with you today my story as well as my answer to that question, if you will indulge me. My story begins in the big city of Lagos with a dream to study abroad, the United States specifically. My parents will always be proponents of education. So when I finally got my chance to study abroad, I was shocked at how many people did not have access to higher education because of numerous barriers, barriers that I myself had to overcome and deal with. My very first real experience was when my psychology teacher asked me not to come into class until I could afford my textbook. I didn't know anyone I could turn to, so dejectedly, I avoided class until I could buy a $100 textbook. Whenever I think about that story, I wonder how differently I would have done in that class if I didn't have to worry about my textbook and was allowed to participate. And I think about the many other students who might have been in my shoes as well and did not persist, but instead decided college wasn't for them. I lead MN because I believe education should be accessible to everyone. I believe that people shouldn't have to jump through so many hurdles and have so many barriers, such as high tuition, high cost of textbooks, basic needs like housing and food insecurity, and so many others. Every year, colleges seem to become less accessible to everyday Americans, and the pandemic has accelerated and exacerbated many of the issues that students were facing before it occurred. If Minnesota is going to come back from this crisis stronger than before, we need your help. Our top priority this year is to make sure that our community and technical colleges are receiving the investment necessary to keep tuition affordable and to provide students with the support they need. In an analysis done by the National College Attainment Network, they found that only 43% of Minnesota's two-year colleges were affordable for low-income students. When our students graduate, they will be the Minnesotans working as nurses, respiratory therapists, welders, police officers, farmers, medical assistants, and electricians. By investing in our colleges and improving college affordability and the support for students, we will build a stronger Minnesota. I would now like to turn it over to Lee Demen's vice president to share a little bit more about himself and some of our other priorities for the year. Thank you.
Chair Bernardi, Ranking Member O'Neill, and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Axel Kylander, and I have the honor of serving as the vice president of Lee Demen. I had the privilege to never doubt that I would go to college. My father has a bachelor's degree, and my mother had a master's degree. In my senior year of high school, she was diagnosed with glioblastoma, a rare and incurable brain cancer. For 15 months, we took care of her while I began my college education. She died around 3 in the morning on July 24th, 2018. With my family, I dug her grave, and with my family, I buried her. And I resumed full-time class just a few weeks later. Within a couple of months, I developed post-traumatic stress disorder, a terrible thing to wrestle with, in addition to my lifelong struggles with depression and anxiety. Beyond confiding in friends, I did not speak much about what I was dealing with. I was afraid of being shunned or shamed, and inside myself, I downplayed the severity of the pain. It gnawed at me more and more with each week. Before my mother's death, I was a 4.0 student with multiple academic awards and honors, but my grades slipped further and further semester by semester after she died. In August of 2019, I attempted suicide, and I still don't know which was the worst day in my 22 years, the day my mother died or the day I tried to join her. I started therapy soon after my attempt, but the damage of going untreated for so long was done for the time. Began to engage in physical self-harm. I found myself so caught up in pain and flashbacks that I seemed to miss days or weeks at a time. I failed almost every single class in the fall of 2019 and admitted myself for a 24-hour hospital stay the day after Christmas that year. And that was the lowest point my life has ever reached. But through my brief time in the hospital and the therapy sessions that came after, I finally started better. I found healthy healing and a better sense of peace and happiness than I'd ever known before. I am one of the lucky ones, one of the privileged few who was readily able to access resources. My story is a common one among students, and it rarely ends with easy access to therapy. According to the CDC, 25% of young people seriously contemplated suicide in 2020. According to a survey Lee Demen itself conducted over this past November, 65% of our students here in Minnesota are concerned about their mental health. 72% grapple with anxiety, and 30% know with certainty that mental health counseling would improve their college experience. Issues that have always been present have festered from lack of treatment and grown under this pandemic into a full-fledged crisis. And you will see the needs of students reflected in legislation we hope to bring forward that will improve mental health awareness and counseling services, build basic needs resource hubs at each college, improve access to online education and transfer, and for increased investment in our community and technical colleges to match the body of our hydra of issues. High costs stripping us of the resources we need to live healthy lives and be successful. What is Lee Demen? We are the future. Not just for ourselves, but for every inch of Minnesota. 75% of the jobs in the state require at least an associate's degree. If we are unable to meet our dreams to attain our degrees because the road through college is so paved with untenable cost to finances and health, then the future of Minnesota will be challenging. The needs of students are a common cause for Minnesota because the future of the state lies with us. I will turn it back over to Priscilla to wrap things up for us.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Ms. Mayola, are we going to be hearing from Amanda Schirmerhorn today?
Yes, we will.
Okay. And I'd like to introduce her to the committee right now. Please begin your testimony. Thank you.
Chair Bernardi, Ranking Member O'Neill, and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Amanda Schirmerhorn. Thank you for allowing the opportunity for students such as myself to speak to you today. I'm a political science major at M-State in Detroit Lakes, Minnesota. I am also a wife and mother of four. My husband, Richard, works as a carpenter. Our twins, Ella and Travis, are 14. Silas will be 11 on Friday. And little Richard is 7. He is, for the most part, nonverbal and has level 3 autism. I am here today to represent the many student parents that live in Minnesota. In 2019, nearly 15 years after my last semester of high school, I felt the time had come for me to pursue my dreams of becoming a civil rights attorney. I enrolled in the paralegal course at our local community college, and I enjoyed my first semester back. One of the first things that I actually learned in that class for paralegal was that you do not need a degree to be a paralegal. So then I switched to political science shortly after as a way to better educate myself on the legislative process before going on to law school. As a parent with school-aged children, it was, and of course still is, a delicate balancing act. Before the pandemic, I often found myself staying up until midnight to meet deadlines for assignments. Now it's not uncommon for me to wake up before 4 a.m. to ensure I have my classwork done before waking up my children to help them with their classwork as well. We have very limited internet bandwidth in our area, and I find myself having to work odd hours in order to allow for their class needs. Not only am I their tutor, but I'm also now a physical therapist, a speech therapist, an occupational therapist, and this is also the case for many parents across the state now. College is time-consuming, but even more importantly, it is very expensive. Not only are many of us struggling to fit classes into our schedule, but we are trying to make it work for our budgets. I'm not ashamed to admit that during the pandemic, SNAP has been beyond life-saving when it comes to choosing between cost of nutritional food for my children and the cost of my textbooks. However, I personally do not qualify under current eligibility requirements due to my status as a full-time student. And I do not work enough hours in a week, meaning that every semester I'm enrolled, my household receives $250 less per month in benefits than if I were only enrolled in school half-time. My only saving grace throughout all this has been, of course, my husband, who's very supportive, and the Transfer Pathway degree program. Thanks to this program, not only will I graduate this spring with an associate's in political science, but all my transfers credit, my credits will transfer to Minnesota State University in Moorhead. So I'll start as a junior, halfway done with my bachelor's degree. So this is going to save me 2 years and at least $15,000. As a parent to students who will be in high school next fall, the anxiety does keep me up at night. I worry, am I taking away from their education? Am I following the right career path? Can we pay for them to attend the school they deserve while paying for my student debt? Not only will we have to struggle to find a way to afford my tuition, but soon the tuition of our four children as well. So long gone are the times where one could simply have a part-time job and pay off their tuition. That is why I'm speaking to you all today as candidly as possible in the hopes that we can all work together to be a part of the solution our state so desperately needs. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. And Ms. Mayo, did you have any closing remarks?
Yes, I do. I won't take too much of your time. So Chair Bernardi and members, in the past, we've come to this committee to talk about the things that LEADMN students face, but we definitely need your help more than ever. And throughout this session, we'll be very happy to highlight the barriers your students are facing and the difficulties that they're facing. And we believe strongly that you would help us address college affordability, mental health resources for students, and also help us move forward as two-year students. So thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony today. Now we are going to move on to Students United and we have Jonathan McNichols who will be presenting on behalf of Students United, and then we have several other students who will be testifying as well. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Nichols. McNichols, excuse me.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi. It appears my camera is not registering the Zoom, so I'm going to proceed without it if that's all right with you. All right. Thank you, Chair Bernardi, and the rest of the members serving this committee for having me here today. My name is Jonathan McNichols, and I'm a recent graduate of the Great Frozen North of Bemidji State University and a current graduate student at Metropolitan State University, where I'm pursuing a master's in advocacy and political leadership. I am also the state chair for Students United. Students United is a 501c3 nonprofit organization written into state statute to be the official voice of the over 50,000 university undergraduate, graduate, and doctoral students of the seven Minnesota State Universities. And we've been doing advocacy work at the Minnesota State system, state, and federal level for over 53 years. Our board of directors is composed of the student body presidents from each of the seven four-year Minnesota State institutions. which creates a coalition that represents all of our members, and our officers are elected from throughout the university system. I come before you today, Madam Chair, not only to introduce myself and the organization I represent, but also to inform the committee on the legislative priorities that our organization is focusing on throughout the upcoming legislative cycle. In order to do that, I think it is important for the committee to understand how our organization's legislative priorities are selected so it can be understood how we represent all the students from the Minnesota State Universities. Our state legislative agenda begins to be formed by our Legislative Priorities Committee, which meets in the beginning of the academic year to establish which priorities we should focus on for the upcoming legislative cycle. And it is comprised from members from each of our seven institutions. Once it passes this committee and moves on to a delegates committee, which is an assembly of 41 students proportionally appropriated according to university student populations. And after it's passed through all these stages of student review, it goes in front of our board of directors for a final adoption as our legislative agenda. The reason I bring this process up today is I believe it to be vitally important for the committee to understand how much students' energy, time, and experience are used to establish our state legislative agenda, which this year is almost in its entirety the need for the state to fully fund Minnesota State's $120 million budget request. As the years have gone on, a decline in state funding for higher education has resulted in tough decisions for our education institutions. Ultimately, when the proportion that the state is funding goes down, either the proportion the students are funding goes up through increases in tuition, fees, and other miscellaneous variables, or programs and operations that are necessary to keep our institutions both competitive and at a Minnesota level of quality are cut. Just a small example over the last year is the terribly unfortunate decision that Minnesota State University Moorhead has had to make. Last year alone, this school has had to cut 10 majors from their school and eliminate over 60 jobs, including 43 faculty and 28 and a half staff positions. These cuts will drastically impact the students who attend this university, lead to increases in class sizes that I've personally seen continuously grow since the start of my education in Minnesota State 6 years ago, while also eliminating opportunities for future students who select our universities for our great choices in degrees. It will also force our institutions to continue to lay off and let go new, temporary, and non-tenured staff and faculty who are statistically more likely to be faculty and staff of color, which are already currently underrepresented in our system and so vitally important for connecting with the students that attend our institutions, more so now than ever, as the system expects an ever-changing and expanding demographics of students. These are just a few reasons the students of Minnesota State Universities support the approval of the Minnesota State budget request in its entirety. We are further impressed with the programmatic breakdown that the system has provided within the current budget beyond campus responsiveness and stabilization that is needed for permanent-based funding, including the emphasis on basic needs, mental health, open educational resources, career and technical education, and scholarship programs that allow our students to get established within our universities, which leads to student retention that is so vital for our system and funding. I personally watched as Chancellor Malhotra and Vice Chancellor Mackley presented the Minnesota State budget in front of the State Senate last Thursday and hope he will present the same information to this committee shortly. So I won't go too much further into the details on these as I will leave that to the Chancellor. But I wanted to make sure to express our organization's support and would happily have deeper conversations with anybody outside of these meetings. All of these needs presented in the budget were true and remain true. Then COVID-19 hits. The state of our campuses and education of my fellow students is at a critical point. If you reflect back on your higher education experience, what stands out to you? Who were the people you met that cemented your careers? What activities and events set you up for who you are today? Who were your mentors? Where did you intern and work? Our students are losing out on what makes higher education so valuable, which is more than just the lectures in the classroom. It's being in student groups and gaining leadership skills. It's receiving advice from upperclassmen and professors. It's accessing internships and on-campus job that builds competitive resumes. It's the development of lifelong friendships. Many of our students are missing out on these important markers while also struggling to pay their bills and having to pay attention to Zoom classes, which are not the preferred method of education for many of our students. The financial and health crisis we're facing is a challenge to our system, like the rest of the world was not prepared for. The pandemic relief and stabilization portion of Minnesota State's funding request will go a long way to providing some support to students during this especially challenging time. This is why students have said they feel it is critically important for the legislature to also consider its commitment in State Statute 135A.01, which states, it is the policy of the legislature to provide stable funding for public post-secondary institutions, and the state and students share the cost of public post-secondary education. The legislature intends to provide at least 67% of the combined revenue from tuition. This commitment was last met in 1999. When the legislature was funding 69% of the cost of public higher education. Minnesota has been continually devaluing public higher education to the point where students are now currently responsible for the majority of higher education costs. I come before you today, Madam Chair, to thank you and this committee for taking their time to hear from students all across the system, but also to share exactly what our students are saying they need in order to be successful in our educational institutions. I do this because it is the role granted to me by this organization, as established by the legislator itself, in order to ensure the voices of our students are heard. We at Students United want nothing more than to be a resource utilized by all, to gain a connection and understanding of the students that this body greatly impacts. I welcome anyone at any time to reach out to me at statechair@studentsunited.org, where I'll happily meet with you, talk with you, Zoom with you, email you, whatever we can do to help you to help provide you with the perspectives that you need in higher education, as you address the issues of your work. We hope to help you utilize the resources and expertise that we as an organization have through the work that we do each and every day. Thank you, Madam Chair, for your time as you listen to me today, alongside many other student leaders and their stories across our great state. I also encourage and welcome any questions you or this committee may have throughout this hearing. And I yield my time.
Thank you very much for your testimony. We move to Emma Zellmer for our next testifier, and on deck is Nico Arias. So thank you and welcome to the committee, Ms. Zellmer.
Hello. Thank you, Chair Bernardi, Vice Chair Christensen, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Emma Zellmer. I am a junior at Minnesota State University, Mankato, studying philosophy, politics, and economics. I'm currently the Vice Chair of Students United, representing the over 50,000 Minnesota State University students alongside the state chair. I am a fourth-generation Minnesota State University Mankato student. I was proud to follow in the footsteps of my parents and grandfather when it was Mankato State University and my great-grandmother who attended Mankato when it was a teacher's college. I was excited to be able to share in my family's legacy of becoming a Maverick and was hopeful that I could afford it in the same way that my family members did before me. My father graduated from Mankato in 1996 without a cent of student debt with no assistance from his family. He was able to achieve this by driving bus during the school year, working during the summer, and with the Minnesota state government sharing the costs of public state colleges and universities at 69.7% under state statute 135A.01. My dad was able to maintain no student debt for his entire college career, and I was unable to do that for even a single year. My sophomore year, I worked as a community advisor in residential life where I received free housing and a stipend. During that year, I was also working as the speaker of the student government, as well as working as a lifeguard on the days I had off, even though I was already over the amount of hours I was allowed to work as a community advisor on top of my 18 credits as a full-time student. Even though I took and created every opportunity I could to afford the cost of college and living, I finished that year alone with $6,500 in student debt. It was then that I figured out there would be no way for me to fully follow in my family's footsteps of being able to finish college without straining my future financials. The last time the Minnesota state government shared the cost of public state colleges and universities at the level required by statute 135A.01 was 1999. I was born in 2000. There was no point in my life that the state government has reached the funding level in that statute. No point in my life or now a majority of students' lives that the state government has fully held up their end of the bargain. I am lucky to have the support necessary for me to maintain my enrollment at Mankato. However, that is not true for all students. During my time as a community advisor, two of my residents had to drop out of college after the first semester due to their inability to fund their education, even though they were both working 30 to 40-hour weeks on top of being a full-time student. The amount of students dropping out due to the cost and other factors is only increasing due to the pandemic. Studies show that approximately 80% of students who drop out of college never return. This pandemic class of students are going to miss out on the degrees and future opportunities to bring to the Minnesota workforce. That is why I'm asking for the state to fully fund the Minnesota State's $120 million budget request so that one day I can fully follow in my family's footsteps of being able to afford college at the great Minnesota public colleges and universities. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And now we have Nico Arias with us. You may proceed. And on deck is Hamisha Elkamune. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi and Vice Chair Christensen and members of the committee. My name is Nico Arias, for the record, and I am graduating after 3 years at Minnesota State University Moorhead after transferring from Wisconsin. I am studying ecology, evolutionary biology with minors in sustainability and public health, and I'm currently serving as a student body president representing approximately 5,000 students on the MSU Moorhead campus. In addition to student body president, I am also a board member of Students United, the statewide association representing the students attending any of the 7 Minnesota State Universities. Students like myself choose Minnesota State Universities for the exceptional and unparalleled opportunities and experiences they offer to their students. The Minnesota State University system attracts students because they are affordable and accessible to a wide range of students. MSU Moorhead, the greater Moorhead community, and the state of Minnesota at large have become my home within the last 3 years. This is thanks to the affordability of MSU Moorhead, which has allowed me to become a member of the community, increasing the likelihood that I stay in the state of Minnesota after I graduate. However, this comes at a cost. I am lucky to have the privilege of being here today, attending the university I attend today at the price it is being offered today. I have worked 5 summers, some where I have worked 2 full-time jobs simultaneously, and during the school year, I consistently work part-time or full-time jobs on top of doing the work of school. And still, I do not have enough money to pay for it. I rely on my parents for any financial aid to aid my higher ed journey, but I realize that comes with a large amount of privilege. Some days, I can only afford to eat a peanut butter jelly sandwich, and far fewer days, I can treat myself to sushi. This is all very dependent on how large my paycheck is. But the truth is, many of my friends cannot do the same, and they have dropped out of school because of the cost. Even prior to the pandemic, friends and students dropped due to the cost of higher education. These students are current and future Minnesotans who cannot afford to attend the most affordable 4-year institutions in the state of Minnesota. Personally, my family can afford to keep me here attending this university, but the story is changing, and you can change that story. Can you imagine a future where students like myself attend Minnesota State Universities and become future Minnesotans? You have the power to make that a possibility by helping keep students like me at these affordable universities. I am here in support of the Minnesota State University System's request for $75 million in pandemic relief and stabilization and $45 million in affordability and equity. This money will keep our universities open to students looking to call Minnesota their home, students and people looking for a chance to find a loving community with a fantastic representative. I urge you to support Minnesota State's request, viewing it as a long-term investment in our state's present and future. Thank you, Chair Bernardi and Vice Chair Christensen and members of the committee.
Thank you for your testimony. And with us now is Hamisha Elkamune. Welcome to the committee.
Chair Bernardi, Vice Chair Christensen, and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Hamisha Elkamune, and I'm a graduate student and the student body president at Metropolitan State University. I also serve on the board of directors for Students United. School was never an easy decision for me. As a high school dropout, I had many barriers to overcome. As a single mom, I had my children to worry about. And as a person struggling with homelessness, I had very few options. On February 28th of 2016, I left an abusive relationship. I had my 2-year-old daughter with me and was pregnant with my 2nd child. We had nowhere to go, so we spent the entire month of March living in my car in the parking lot of Walmart South in Rochester, Minnesota.
I knew that the only way out of that life was to go to school, so I worked to earn my GED from Hawthorne Academy. During that time, I was working around 60 hours a week and saving for an apartment. By the end of March, I had a security deposit and first month's rent together and had signed a lease. I had also earned my GED. I knew I couldn't afford a university, so I started my educational journey at a community college. Once I had exhausted all my credits that I could possibly take there, I transferred to Metropolitan State University here in St. Paul. My main concern was tuition costs, and Metro was the most affordable of my options. Today, I'm speaking to you as a graduate with honors holding a bachelor's degree in psychology. I overcame my barriers, right? But I think I have inherited a whole new set of barriers. The job market crashed, the COVID-19 pandemic is still in full force, and working hard is no longer enough to move us forward. My landlord raised my rent twice since the start of the pandemic, and while I've applied for job after job, the only ones available are low pay and no benefit positions. My prospects are abysmal, and my living costs are rising at a terrifying rate. I remember what life was like before I started college, hunting to borrow money from anyone just to buy formula or diapers. And I remember many times having to go without. When I think about leaving school for the current job market, I'm afraid of how fast we will end up back there. That's why I continued for my master's in advocacy and political leadership. My family needs those student loans in addition to my 3 part-time jobs just to get by. Even with them, we're still struggling. My student loan balance when I finished my undergrad was $49,721.86. I'm taking out $10,000 in loans each semester for my master's. I don't know how I'm going to pay that back. Right now, I don't have another option but to continue taking out massive loans to try to cover the massive gap between what I can afford and what the state covers. I wish I could say I'm unique. As students, we're all just waiting for internship opportunities to come back, for employers to start hiring again, for our families to be safe from COVID, and for our kids to go back to school. This is why funding Minnesota State's request is so important. It's not just about funding higher education. It's also about rebuilding the economy, keeping our children's education on track, and bettering Minnesota's future. Thank you for centering student voices in the conversation about state funding for higher education. I appreciate the opportunity to testify to this committee.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next with us is Sirkel Yousafzai from St. Cloud State University, and on deck is Clara Kirshner. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi, Vice Chair Christensen, member of the committee. My name is Sirkel Yousafzai, for the record. I'm a senior at St. Cloud State University doing a double major in political science and international relations with a certification in global feminist leadership. I'm currently serving as a student body president representing all 12,000 students on our campus. And as student body president, I also serve as a board member of Students United, the statewide association of students attending the 7 Minnesota state schools. I'm an international student. The 2 core reasons I decided to come to St. Cloud State was because of its affordability and secondly, how diverse and involved the student body is. The pandemic has increased gaps and disparities in students' economic outlook, making it difficult for students to remain in college. One of the hardest hit communities on our campuses are the international students. Due to the existing laws, international students are already bound to just work on campus and have no access to financial aid. With school services being shut down or limited, majority of the international students lost their job as priority in hours was given to full-time local employees. I personally lost my campus job for 3 months during summers. Us international students are not eligible for any unemployment benefits, and we're also not included in the stimulus checks given by the federal government. We also need to keep in mind that COVID-19 is a global pandemic. People in the developing countries, from where majority of international students belong, faced a much stronger negative financial impact than those in the developed world. When the world's brightest minds choose to study in the United States, and specifically Minnesota, they contribute to American innovation and growth. In the 2018-2019 academic year, international students contributed to around $45 billion to the U.S. economy. If we discourage our international students, we lose their contribution to America's scientific and technical research, we lose their innovation and their contribution to our communities. The $125 million Minnesota State is requesting is in pandemic relief and affordability and equity. I urge you to support Minnesota State's request. It is in the best interest of Minnesota's economic future to help all those who call Minnesota home and all those that wish to call Minnesota home. I thank you for your centering student voices in the conversation about state funding for higher education, and urge you to uphold State Statute 135A01, in which the Minnesota legislature committed to funding 67% of the cost of post-secondary education. I appreciate the opportunity to testify to the committee. I will gladly answer any of your questions. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your testimony. Now we have with us Clara Kushner. Welcome to the Kushner, welcome to the committee.
Chair Bernardi, Vice Chair Christensen, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Clara Kushner. I'm a senior at Winona State University studying secondary education. I am currently serving as the student body president, representing all 7,000 students on my campus, and as student body president, I also serve as a board member of Students United. I had never heard of Winona State until I was a junior in high school, looking at what to do after graduation. Ultimately, I'm so glad that had a family friend attend WSU who told me about this amazing university. Ultimately, I chose to attend Winona State because of the beautiful location in Southeast Minnesota and the sense of home that I felt while I was touring. As a student, I have learned much more about the institution itself and the MinnState system, which has given me a greater appreciation for this university. The affordability of Winona State in comparison to other similar universities can't be beat. I'll be the first to say that I've had a relatively privileged college experience, one that most of my fellow classmates have not, and some of them you've even heard from today. I have not struggled financially, while some students are left wondering whether they're going to purchase groceries or textbooks each month. I've earned scholarships, gotten financial aid, and had minimal financial support from my parents to attend Winona State University. All that being said, I'm still scared of what my financial life will look like after I graduate in December. I'll have upwards of $20,000 in student debt looming over me in less than a year. I worry about whether I'll be living in my parents' basement for the foreseeable future or if I'll be able to afford my student loan payments. I'm here today to tell you that I fully support Minnesota State's request of $120 million. This request is essential for the success of my fellow students. Supporting the funding request from MinnState means that the cost of attending Winona State or any other of the MinnState schools won't go up. Students can focus on getting an education rather than where their next meal is going to come from. When students' needs are met outside the classroom, they're better able to focus their attention on what is happening inside the classroom. Funding this request will do exactly that for thousands of students across the state. Students who are able to stay enrolled at a MinnState university are more likely to remain in Minnesota after they graduate and contribute to the economy long after graduation. Again, I, like fellow testifiers on this committee, I urge you to support MinnState's request as it is in the best interest of Minnesota's economic future. I sincerely thank you for allowing student voices to be at the center of this conversation about state funding for higher education, and I also urge you to uphold State Statute 135A.01, in which the legislature is committed to funding 67% of the cost of public post-secondary education. I appreciate this opportunity to testify to this committee. Thank you, and I yield my time back.
Thank you very much, Students United, for your testimony today. We appreciate it. Now we're going to move on to the University of Minnesota, and we have testifiers from Duluth, from Rochester, from Morris, and Crookston, the Crookston person was not able to make it at the last minute, but we do have joining us right now, Sam Parmecker and Bree Sislo-Shuda. Welcome to the committee, and Mr. Parmecker, would you like to start?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And actually, Ms. Sislo-Shuda was unable to join us today, but our student body president, Amy Ma, is going to kick us off.
Okay. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Ma.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Bernardi and members of the committee. And thank you for the opportunity to be here today. My name is Amy Ma, and I'm currently serving as the student body president at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. I'm also a fourth-year student studying management information systems and computer science. The Minnesota Student Association, or MSA, is the undergraduate student government at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. Our mission is to advocate for students by working with university administrators, the Board of Regents, and legislators. Every spring, the student body president and vice president are elected through an all-campus elections process. Our team of 35 staff members and over 80 student representatives work on initiatives to help support students, ranging from academic policies to mental health resources. We also have specific teams, like our government and legislative affairs team, which Sam is on, representing us at the Minnesota Legislature, as well as student representatives to the Board of Regents, representing us at the highest level of governance. Today, we'd like to share some of our key initiatives as well as legislative priorities. I'll get started with some of our key initiatives. First, we truly believe that creating easy access to the ballot box for young people is the best way to instill civic engagement as a lifelong value. In 2018, the University of Minnesota Twin Cities had the highest voter turnout in the state, the Big Ten, and among all public four-year institutions. In 2020, we strived to build upon our voter registration efforts. We continue our integrated voter registration, which prompts students to register to vote on the same platform that they register for classes. To adapt to our virtual learning environment, we launched a voter ambassador program to text their peers to remind them to vote. Finally, we successfully advocated for an early on-campus ballot drop-off box to ensure that students could safely cast their vote before or on election day. This year, the University of Minnesota is requesting $46.5 million, our smallest request in over 20 years. This investment is crucial to ensure that the University of Minnesota and the future of our state remains strong in years to come. Higher education remains inaccessible nationwide, and this has been exacerbated by the current pandemic. As the committee is allocating resources to higher education, we would really encourage you all to prioritize immediate student needs such as mental health, nutrition, and financial relief during COVID-19. I'll pass this on to Sam for some of our legislative priorities, but we look forward to our continued collaboration with this committee and the larger Minnesota legislature, including at our virtual Support the U Day on March 4th. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Parmecker.
Thank you, Amy. Thank you, Chair Bernardi and members of the committee. My name is Sam Parmakar. I'm a fourth-year student studying political science, and I'm the state government director for the Minnesota Student Association. Today, I'd like to give you a brief overview of our legislative priorities for the 2021 session. This session, we're bringing forward three policy bills to address issues that are important to students on campuses around the state. We worked with many of our peer student governments to develop this legislation last session and are looking forward to working with many of the folks presenting today this year. Our first bill is medical amnesty for victim survivors of sexual assault. This would provide limited immunity from prosecution for the possession or consumption of drugs or alcohol to an individual if they would otherwise be incriminated as a result of reporting a sexual assault. We know that many people are assaulted while they're under the influence, and survey data shows that this can be a huge barrier that prevents victim survivors from coming forward and reporting. By enshrining this common sense protection into state law, we can help create an environment where more people, especially college-age students, feel safe and supported when they report an assault. Our second bill is a piece of lease reform legislation that provides some important student-tenant protections. Short-end leases that terminate before the end of the month but force a tenant to pay a full month's rent are incredibly common on campuses across the state. Section 1 of our bill requires rent to be prorated based on the number of days a tenant is allowed to occupy the unit under these circumstances. Student tenants also face a lot of pressure to sign leases for the next academic year just a month or two after moving into a new apartment. Section 2 prohibits a landlord from requiring the renewal of a 12-month lease until at least 4 months into the lease, protecting student renters from the intense pressure of having to decide whether to renew their lease in October or November. We've worked with groups like Homeline and Minnesota Multi-Housing to craft language that strikes a fair balance between student tenants and landlords, and we believe that we have a bill that empowers students to navigate the college rental market as confident consumers. Finally, we're advocating for a bill to protect student data privacy as higher education becomes increasingly digitized. Our bill would limit the amount of personal student information that a school can publicly list on its online student directory, which every institution maintains pursuant to FERPA requirements. Furthermore, the bill imposes important limitations on when and how a school may track student location data and governs how that data must be used and stored. We look forward to discussing this bill in more detail when it comes before this committee later on in the session. Over the past year, we've worked hard to build strong bipartisan support for each of these bills in both chambers of the legislature. We think it's so important that when it comes to the unique issues that students face, that students should lead the way in finding policy solutions. We're confident that this committee will help lead the way in ensuring that student voices are a permanent fixture at the legislature. Lastly, we're hoping to work closely with members of this committee on the University of Minnesota Regent selection process this year. Students have historically been left out of the process of selecting new regents, but this year we plan to set a new precedent to create meaningful avenues for student input. We've worked with a coalition of student groups on our campus to develop a student issues questionnaire that we have sent to regent candidates so that we may learn a little bit more about their positions on university policy before they come before the Joint Higher Education Committee in February. It's so, so important that we have a board of regents that reflects student priorities, because ultimately, the legislature's appointment of regents is the only opportunity for regents to be held accountable to the university community. Beyond the university's budget request, this is your biggest opportunity to impact the direction of our university system. We need a board that's going to chart a new course from the one we've been on the past few years, one that makes the basic needs of students, or the backbone of our university system, the number one priority. Even before the pandemic, students were struggling. Survey data from 2018 shows that 1 in 5 students on our campus experienced food insecurity at their time at the university, and 44% of students reported being seriously concerned that they were going to be unable to make a monthly housing payment. As we know, these problems have only been exacerbated since the pandemic began. With every extra hour a student has to work at a second or third job, or every meal that a student has to miss, we are creating an environment in which students are not able to perform to the top of their abilities in an academic setting, and thus we're depriving them of the full educational opportunities that they should be afforded. It is far past time for the university to prioritize the basic needs of students as it shapes its budget and university policies moving forward. We encourage you to select regents in this session that reflect the priorities of students first and foremost, and we'll be in touch with members of this committee to make sure you know what student priorities are and which candidates most closely align with our vision for our university. We urge you to listen to the voices of students as you consider how to shape the future of our university. Thank you so much for the opportunity to testify, and we look forward to working with you this session.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Now with us from the University of Minnesota Duluth is Anna Cunahan, and she'll be able to tell us exactly how to pronounce her last name. Welcome to the committee, and she is presenting on behalf of the Duluth Student Association.
Hello. Yes, for the record, my name is Anna Cunahan. You'll have to excuse me. I actually got called into work, so this will be definitely under 5 minutes, so I apologize in advance. My name is Annie Cunahan. I use pronouns like she, her, hers. I am proudly from South St. Paul, Minnesota. I was raised in a busy home with 2 parents and 2 older sisters. I'm a triple major in political science, Latin American studies, and environmental sustainability and geography at the University of Minnesota Duluth. Following undergrad, I plan on attending law school in order to become an immigration attorney. I'm very passionate about social justice, especially Latinx rights in marginalized communities. And I chose UMD, honestly, because I wanted to get away from my parents. I had originally planned on moving out of state, but at the time I was struggling with anorexia nervosa, and Duluth was the farthest place that my helicopter mom would let me go. So naturally, I went to Duluth. But I like to say that it's not about what drew me to UMD, but it's about what kept me there. The smaller class sizes and the relationships that I have with my classmates have inspired me to be a better advocate for them. The relationships I have with my professors bring me opportunities to further my education. And lastly, the relationship I made with my therapist gives me the emotional stability to actually be able to stay here. I've had a diagnosed anxiety disorder since the age of 9 and have been in and out of therapy pretty much my whole life, and I'm privileged to be able to say this. However, the connection I made with my therapist at UMD is unlike any other. Although I still struggle with mental health issues, I'm able to cope and grieve with them much better thanks to my therapist at the UMD Health Services. Aside from my therapist, many other factors forced me to stay. I'm so lucky to serve as a student body vice president at UMD, leading to my roles in the system-wide Senate system. This year has been filled with advocating for UMD students on the system Senate level. Last year, I served as the chief student life officer for our student association. And through this, I initiated a new campaign on our campus, Shatter the Silence of Sexual Violence. Being a victim of multiple accounts of sexual assault, this is a topic I'm very invested in, and UMD has given me the resources to advocate for fellow survivors and organize community events. Like some other people testifying, I am very lucky in my access to education and therapy, but my story is unique. So many young adults are not able to not only have the access to educational opportunities I've had, but the access to therapy through these educational opportunities I've had. Many of my closest friends here come from homes without health insurance, leading to their mental health issues to be placed on the back burner. Not only does the legislative state funding give young adults access to education that might not have been there before, but it also gives these students the opportunity to receive therapy if offered by respective universities. In many other instances, this life-saving access to therapy is some students' only chance to obtain it. However, UMD's health services is overworked and understaffed. According to the International Accreditation of Counseling Services, the standard for counselor-to-student ratios is one counselor for every 1,000 to 1,500 students. In the fiscal year of 2018, which is the last year for which data is available, but not much has changed, the ratio at UMD was one counselor for every 2,127 students. And UMD was the only University of Minnesota system campus that failed to meet the IAC standard. This leads students to only be able to obtain 7 free therapy sessions per semester, therefore limiting their access to therapy. This is why I advocate for the university's $46.5 million request from the Minnesota legislature. And of course, it wouldn't be a formal meeting if I didn't mention the effects of COVID. I was originally planning to do field research in Morocco this summer and instead quarantined with my family back in St. Paul. My father is a person with many underlying health conditions, so quarantine was no joke in my family, as it should not have been. Then the doctors found a large brain tumor in my sister, amplifying the COVID panic in our house. Not only was this difficult for my mental health, but this took a toll on my whole family. We were more isolated than ever, increasingly frustrated with the lack of financial support from the government for college students like myself. Both of my parents took pay deductions, my sister was laid off, and I didn't have a job once campus was shut down. However, my family has it better than many other families in our state, and I would like to direct our efforts and our action for students and future students living in poverty and homelessness. My family is surviving, but many families are not. Again, I would like to thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee for taking all of this into consideration, and I truly appreciate the opportunity to testify to this distinguished committee. Furthermore, I would also like to thank my fellow students in testifying to this committee today. Your vulnerability and strength really empowers me, and I'm sure as does members of this committee. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. With us next we have two people from the University of Minnesota Rochester. We have Yusra Youssef and Pal Kowak. Welcome to the committee. Let's see. Yusra Youssef, if you could please begin your testimony. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone. For the record, my name is Yusra Youssef, and I feel very honored today to be able to speak with some of the most important leaders in our state. With that being said, I am a current second year student at the University of Minnesota Rochester. I aspire to go to medical school and one day become a dermatologist. So, a little bit about me. I was born and raised in the Twin Cities. As a woman of color in Minnesota, our community has faced many challenges and shortages in the healthcare field. It's oftentimes been said to me, or even outright said, that science is not for women, especially those who look like me. However, my passion for healthcare and science always remained the same. I have known that I wanted to go to college since I was a little kid, for many reasons, but one that drove my passion for higher education was my parents. Both my parents, Yasin and Amina, immigrated from Somalia to the United States with hope filled in their hearts. They proved to me that hard work truly pays off. You have a dream or a passion, and you chase it. Looking back a few years ago, I was afraid of what college could be for me. Coming to the University of Minnesota Rochester as a first-generation student, I came across other students like myself and staff who could relate to my story. I am a part of a living learning community called Global Connections. Since the first day on campus, I entered a community that supports increasing cultural understanding, competency, connections, and knowledge. In my first year, we were able to visit different communities in the Rochester area. We called them host families, as we would make authentic meals from their culture and learn more about their lives. Right from the start, I've been supported by incredible professors, staff, and my peers. I'm the secretary and treasurer of the Rochester Student Association, an ambassador, and a member of the Muslim Student Association. I am also currently involved in our Diversity and Inclusion Committee and our Black Student Union, both of which focus heavily on having an inclusive campus and equal representation of everyone. It's important when looking at diversity, we don't just stop at what could be visible to the eye. It's important to acknowledge one another's background, religious beliefs, life experiences, and more. Some of my peers have traveled from all over to come to UMR. My peers and I have been part of such a diverse range of opportunities. Being surrounded by healthcare professionals in one of the best hospitals in the world has been life-changing. Last year, I had the opportunity to shadow a medical student, and I was recently just offered a job opportunity at Mayo Clinic. The collaboration with Mayo Clinic has been extremely influential during my college experience. In the years that I have been at UMR, innovation not only in the realms of technology, but also in teaching methods and learning strategies have been essential. We are constantly trying to enhance how we solve problems, work with one another, and look at the world around us. As a health science school, it's important to be empowered for the future. Health and science are constantly changing as we receive new information from studies, and so is the world we live in. I am very excited to see the new ways to educate students and also teach them important skills, not only at UMR, but across the state of Minnesota. After all, we are the future of Minnesota. I want to applaud all of you for all the hard work that you do and continue to do. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And with us now is Pal Kuak, and I apologize for not possibly pronouncing your name correctly. Welcome to the committee.
No worries, close enough. Yusra, I would have applauded. I would have clapped if it wouldn't have been distracting on camera. Good afternoon, Chair Bernardi and members of the committee. My name is Paul Koch, and I'm a sophomore at the university.
That was my second option.
I'm a sophomore at the University of Minnesota Rochester, whereas we refer to it endearingly as UMR. On campus, my leadership roles are as representative to the Board of Regents and as a member of the Black Student Union. After undergrad, I plan on pursuing the MD PhD path with an interest in gene editing and hematology. So the virus has exposed our country's areas of weaknesses, and at the same time, it's emphasized the importance of science and healthcare. Here at UMR, the way this has played out has been, it's been evident the number of students that have been experiencing isolation due to our classes being moved online. And because of this, our college has seen that the importance of collaboration and innovation. And UMR is working towards this in the coming years by forming and continuing to work with Google and Mayo Clinic so that they can create a gamified interface where students and teachers can better collaborate and learn. So because of UMR's close relationship with Mayo Clinic, I and some of my classmates have been able to have experiences here at Mayo. For instance, I've been able to do research since my first semester of freshman year. And with your support, we want to make this a possibility for every student that comes to UMR. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Koch. And next person testifying is from the University of Minnesota Morris, Sam Rosemark. And then on deck is Kim Nguyen. Welcome to our committee, Mr. Rosemark.
Thank you very much. Chair Bernardi, Vice Chair Christensen, Ranking Member O'Neill, and members of the committee. My name is Sam Rosemark. I'm a senior at the University of Minnesota Morris, where I serve as the campus's student body president. It is an honor to provide testimony today on behalf of the University of Minnesota Morris students in support of increased funding for the University of Minnesota, our state's land-grant public research university. I'm extremely grateful for the 3.5 years that I've spent at the University of Minnesota Morris. The Morris campus is located on the prairie in west central Minnesota. U of M Morris has a tight-knit community and a wide range of accessible student opportunities. These opportunities range from taking courses with expert and caring faculty to student leadership positions on campus and in the community, and from doing undergraduate research to studying abroad. The opportunities are truly endless. Throughout my years at Morris, I have been a research assistant with an expert political science professor on the rural-urban divide. I've been a student representative on numerous, and I do mean numerous, boards, work groups, and committees. I was a part of a U of M student delegation that traveled to Germany to learn about the renewable energy transition. I have interned for multiple government agencies with the help of recommendation letters from faculty. I've been elected twice as our campus's student body president and have been able to engage with a multitude of diverse and caring faculty, staff, and students, with nearly 25% of Morris students being Native American. I think one of my top achievements, though, was successfully applying for a $500,000 grant for the local Morris School District to purchase 2 electric school buses as part of my Office of Sustainability on-campus job. Now, all that was not to list my achievements, but it was to show you what the U has done for me, my leadership, and my future, and also, and more importantly, my community and state's future. I also guarantee you that every Morris and U of M student would also be able to share a similar list of achievements and opportunities that they took advantage of. The thing, though, about all these opportunities is that students can only take advantage of them if they are supported financially, academically, and socially. If I attended an institution that constantly and significantly raised tuition or had high tuition, I guarantee you that I or other students would not be able to engage in these opportunities. If I attended an institution that was not able to hire as great a faculty or staff, uptake facilities, and create new programs and services due to the lack of funding, I would not be as supported as I am. Even during the pandemic, the University of Minnesota is putting the well-being and success of students at the top of the priority list. In order to continue to support students, have excellent faculty, update facilities, and adapt programs and services to student needs, we need funding and support from the state legislature. Less funding quite literally translates to less support or increased tuition for students. Students now more than ever need your support. The pandemic has hit everyone hard, including the state. That is why the U's request for an increase of $46.5 million in the U is the U's lowest budget request in over 20 years. Funding not only helps students, but it also helps our state. An investment into the U of M means an investment not only into me as a young person and other young people hoping to do great things, but also an investment into each region of Minnesota and the people that live there. The U has 5 strong, unique campuses across all of Minnesota that work together to improve the lives of all Minnesotans. In a 2017 report, it was discovered that U of M generated a combined economic impact of $8.7 billion in 2017, and that every dollar invested by the state into the U of M yields a $13.83 return to the state's economy, a more than 1,000% increase. Supporting higher education and the mission of higher ed is more important now than ever before, especially affordable and accessible higher education, public higher education. The U is a smart investment because it is an investment into our state and into our future, the students. I also hope to connect with you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee on the immensely important responsibility of the committee and of the legislature to select the University of Minnesota regents. Student voices as primary stakeholders need to be heard in the selection process. So with that, thank you, Madam Chair, Vice Chair Christensen, Ranking Member O'Neill, and members for your support and opportunity to testify. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. With us now is Kim Nguyen from St. Catherine University. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and other members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kim Nguyen, and as I stated, my name is Kim Nguyen, and I'm from North St. Paul, Minnesota. I graduated in 2018 from North Senior High School, and I'm currently a third-year student at St. Catherine University, majoring in nursing and minoring in psychology. I chose to go to St. Catherine University because I love the mission statement that our school has of educating women to lead and influence. I was drawn to St. Catherine University because of the values of social justice and service, both of which are very important to me as I pursue my education. Currently, I work as a nursing assistant at the University of Minnesota East Bank Medical Center, and after I graduate, I plan to work as a labor and delivery or NICU nurse and eventually pursue my master's degree in nursing. I'm also a Minnesota State Grant recipient, and this grant has positively impacted my life. I'm a first-generation student, and I'll be the first in my immediate family to graduate from college. This grant is extremely important to me because it has allowed me to pursue an education at the school that best fits me. It has allowed me to focus on my studies and not have to worry about my finances while I'm in school. It has also allowed me to be able to have more time to be involved in campus organizations such as Student Senate. Even during this pandemic, this grant has provided me with a financial safety net, which has eased many of my financial burdens, which shows the impact this grant has made in my life. Along those lines, COVID has also impacted my life in many ways. This past December, I tested positive for COVID, and I had to quarantine on campus for 10 days in isolation housing. There were many positives as well as negatives that came with that experience. One challenge was being completely isolated from the outside world. Although 10 days doesn't seem like much, being in quarantine greatly affected my mental health. It was difficult being apart from my roommate as well as my family, and I had felt like I had lost my connection with the world around me. After getting out of quarantine, it took a lot of support and many tough days to get back to my happy and healthy self, and it definitely was not easy. Another challenge was attending online classes while in quarantine with COVID. In my case, I experienced several symptoms such as fatigue, headaches, muscle weakness, and loss of taste and smell. While it was tough dealing with the illness itself, it was especially challenging trying to attend online classes while I was mentally and physically exhausted, as well as taking finals online. I missed a nursing skills test out that I had to reschedule, and I had a paper as well as two exams all in the span of 1 week. However, there are positives that came with the experience as well. I'm extremely grateful that many of my professors were so understanding and patient with me during that time. They gave me grace by extending deadlines, providing me resources and support, and just trying their best to work with me while I was in quarantine. Another positive is that I was able to complete most of my schoolwork virtually, which really helped. I couldn't imagine having to do my assignments if classes weren't online or if I had clinicals during that time. Overall, my experience with COVID has taught me a lot. It's taught me to be more flexible as a student and has made me realize how serious of an illness COVID is, as I'm still experiencing the residual symptoms. Before I had gotten it, I had no idea how much of an impact it was going to have on my life, but it truly is one of the worst illnesses I've ever dealt with, and I would never wish it upon anyone. However, it has also made me understand the importance of following public health guidelines and working together as a state so that we can keep each other safe and hopefully get back to normal. Thank you for this opportunity for me to testify to this committee.
Thank you for your testimony. We got through all of our testifiers today, and I want to thank each one of our students who testified today. You sharing your stories really helps us as legislators to better represent you and our entire state. We want to thank you for sharing such personal stories, and we want to wish you the very, very best. I am so hopeful for our future because with leaders like you that are in school and will be in the workforce soon, and I know you already are in the workforce, we really want to wish you the best. And thank you for taking your time out to testify with us today. We have 2 minutes left. I am going to ask if there is a member who has a question that they can limit it to a 30-second or 15-second question, and we will try to get a student to answer it. Okay, I don't see anyone raising their hand.
Jenny did.
Representative Mason, real quickly, we have 1 minute now. Go ahead.
I was just telling you that Representative Cleavorn's hand is up.
Oh, thank you, Representative Cleavorn.
Chair Bernardi, I don't have a question. I just have to say This is my third year on this committee, and the stories that we heard today were incredibly personal. And I just want to thank each of the students for sharing those intimate stories with us. It really does. Your stories drive our work at the Capitol, and it's really critical that you did that. And I just want to thank you for doing it and for being so honest with us. Thank you.
And I see one more hand. We'll do one more. We'll do one more. Representative Hansen, did you have your hand up?
Yes, thank you, Chairwoman Bernardi. I just want to echo what Representative Cleavorn said. As a single mom and recent college graduate and a first-generation college graduate and a first-term member, I'm so thankful to hear from all of the students today. I want you to know that we hear your stories, and there's folks in this body who have lived those experiences too, and I'm just so proud of all of you that showed up here to tell your stories and to take a leap, because this is what changes how we address higher education. This is how we create a Minnesota that we want. So everybody here that went out of your comfort zone and came here to be with us in this virtual setting, thank you, thank you, thank you. And I can't wait to see all that we do together. So take care.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing those comments. And thank you again for being here. We want to be student center. We want to hear your voices. We want you to stay in touch with us. And table here at the legislature is for you too, and we want you to be here. So please keep in touch with us. Thank you, members. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.